about not only our employees, the users of our system, and again, how do we even get here and how do we address these systemic issues?
Can you explain, Alejandra, what keyword subpoenas are?
Right. So they've been actually used for a long time. And the whole idea is that basically, because Google knows a lot about what users do on our system, down to they usually know that you made that search, it is possible for law enforcement to use that information to find what people do. In fact, there's a interesting case actually here in Denver where they were able to use a keyword search for somebody looking up a particular address to figure out who went to a house. In this case, what we are very likely to see is requests for keyword searches of, I'm searching for an abortion. Maybe also providing that information in other search results. That we believe that that's very likely going to start to happen more and more as people look to criminalize pregnancy and not just be searching for providers, but actually searching for those who are just seeking it out.
Finally, what will be the response? I mean, more than 650 of you, of Alphabet workers, have signed this petition. If you don't get a response?
Well, we've been organizing for more than a year and a half, amplifying employee voices. We're going to continue to work on that. We're starting to collaborate with other unions because we believe this needs to be a national response. This is absolutely a labor issue. It's an impact to our healthcare rights, and we must protect those. And we're going to continue to bring more people on to figure out what do we do about this? How can we listen to the employees who know a lot about these systems, who know where the information is and what's really the right way to fix these problems. And I will put out a call to all fellow employees, join us. This is the time. This is when we need you. Don't wait.
On that note, Alejandra Beatty, I want to thank you for being with us, Southwest Chapter Lead with the Alphabet Workers Union, speaking to us from Denver. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Development and Events Committee meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, infectious disease expert Anthony Fauci announces his retirement, Portland police still won't name officers involved in shootings, and in international news, Singapore promises to repeal its long-standing ban on gay sex. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, August 22nd, 2022. I'm Michelle Coppola. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the nation's top infectious disease expert, announced today that he will leave the federal government in December after more than five decades of service. Fauci is director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. He also serves as chief medical advisor to President Joe Biden and, in fact, has counseled seven presidents in the past. He has recently become a household name because of helping direct the nation's response to the COVID-19 pandemic, but he previously advised us on numerous outbreaks, including HIV/AIDS, SARS, pandemic flu, Ebola, and anthrax. Fauci said it was time to, quote, pursue the next chapter of my career, end quote. Early in the COVID pandemic, Fauci's plea for public caution clashed with former President Trump's desire to return to normalcy and to promote unproven treatments. Fauci continued to speak out publicly, advocating social distancing and masks in public settings. He was subject of political attacks and death threats and was given a security detail for his protection. When Biden was elected president, he asked Fauci to stay on in his administration in a higher capacity. Biden said, quote, whether you've met him personally or not, he has touched all Americans' lives with his work. I extend my deepest thanks for his public service. The United States of America is stronger, more resilient, and healthier because of him, end quote. Fauci plans to continue working after leaving the government, and he hopes his work will inspire a younger generation of scientists to consider a career in public service. A groundbreaking provision in a new Minneapolis teachers' contract was intended to shield educators of color from seniority-based layoffs. Now, conservative media outlets have denounced this policy as racist and claim it establishes unconstitutional discrimination against white educators. And at least one group is looking to recruit teachers and taxpayers willing to sue to get the new language thrown out. The contract language does not specifically state that white teachers would be laid off ahead of teachers of color, but critics say that's what the ultimate effect would be. The contract exempts educators who are members of populations underrepresented among licensed teachers in that district, as well as alumni of historically Black, Hispanic, and tribal colleges. About 60% of the district's teachers are white, but more than 60% of the students are from racial minorities. Advocates say students from racial minorities perform better when they have teachers and support staff of color. Greta Callahan, president of the teachers union at the Minneapolis Federation of Teachers, said her union fought for years to get the protection added to their contract. While Minneapolis is one of many districts across the U.S. struggling with declining teacher headcounts, Callahan disputed the claim that the provision threatens anyone's job, noting that Minneapolis has nearly 300 unfilled positions. Callahan called it, quote, just one teensy, tiny step towards equity, end quote, adding that it does not begin to make up for many teachers of color quitting in recent years because they felt underpaid and disrespected. However, James Dickey, senior trial counsel at the Upper Midwest Law Center, a conservative nonprofit that often challenges public employee unions, said, quote, the object of this provision is clearly to lay off white teachers first, regardless of merit, based on the color of their skin. And that is a big problem under the Constitution and the 14th Amendment, end quote. Dickey said his group is considering suing and has had a numerous Minneapolis taxpayers and some teachers contact them to say they were offended. He argued that the 1986 U.S. Supreme Court Wygant decision bars such provisions and serves as a precedent in Minnesota. The Wygant case involved a teacher's contract in Jackson, Michigan. It effectively said that Jackson could not make cuts that led to an overall reduction in the percentage of minority personnel employed in that district. White teachers there sued after being laid off, while some teachers of color with less seniority kept their jobs. The Supreme Court held that the layoffs violated the Equal Protection Clause of the U.S. Constitution. Two affirmative action cases, which could have a bearing on the Minneapolis dispute, are set for oral arguments before the Supreme Court in October. The cases challenge the consideration of race in college admission decisions. Affirmative action has been reviewed by the High Court several times over the past 40 years, and it has generally been upheld with limits. Some feel that with the three new conservative justices on the Supreme Court, affirmative action may come more broadly under threat. Portland Community College wants to go back to having a lot more face-to-face classes this fall, but that decision has some potentially negative repercussions. KBOO's Grant Button has more on that story.
Portland Community College shifts to predominantly in-person or hybrid classes this fall. Next month, 50% of PCC classes will be held in-person or in a hybrid setting. This is a significant increase from last fall, as only 15% of classes took place on campus. Although the increase in on-campus classes is helpful for many students, it will also minimize the online classes offered. PCC student Penny Harper, who has an immunosuppressive disease, says that the fewer online classes will disproportionately affect those who are disabled or immunocompromised. She wants PCC to continue to offer a wide variety of online classes, stating, "I think it's less important that we physically gather in classrooms to learn, and more important that we can learn wherever and however we are." Accessibility is crucial to many older students at PCC who frequently work jobs or have families. In fact, in 2019 to 2020, the average credit-taking student at PCC was 27 years old. The college does have a policy to ensure accessibility during the shift back to in-person operations and is required to permit remote teaching for those who are at higher risk of serious illness from COVID-19. PCC students hope that the college will balance the needs of all individuals as they work to shift more classes in person this fall. For KBOO News, I'm Grant Button.
The Portland Police Bureau has extended a procedure of not naming officers who used their weapons on the job. They say ongoing threats to those officers underlie the departure from standard policy, but did not specify what those threats entailed. The Bureau did say last week that the FBI would investigate the potential danger to police officers. That change first took place in late July when a Police Bureau press release announced the agency would not release the name of an officer who had shot and killed a person armed with a gun 2 days earlier. The release said the officer's name might be made public after the investigation. Last week, another focused intervention team officer shot someone who allegedly was pointing a gun. The Bureau again said that officer names will continue to be withheld until the investigation is complete. Portland Police Bureau directives require the names of officers involved in using deadly force and in-custody deaths to be made public within 24 hours unless there is a credible security threat. The police watchdog group Portland Cop Watch said the Bureau is claiming a broad, ongoing security threat when the directive only applies to officers involved in specific incidents. The Portland FBI office in Portland said Friday that the agency could not confirm or deny the existence of an investigation into the alleged threats, though the FBI was aware of some threats to Portland officers. Portland police have been involved in multiple deadly force incidents in 2022. They have fired at 6 people this year and killed 3. The Focused Intervention Team, an effort to reduce high levels of gun violence, has been involved in 3 of those shootings. The Portland Police Bureau has previously concealed the names of officers before because of unspecified threats against them. During the 2020 racial justice protests, the Bureau allowed officers to post numbers on their uniforms instead of name tags. A judge eventually forced the Bureau to release the names of the officers and their corresponding numbers. Liz Cheney wants a new PAC to support anti-Trump Republicans. Lindsey Graham does not have to testify about Trump's stolen election claims. And President Biden discusses a risk to a Ukrainian nuclear power plant. With more on these stories, it's Nadia Ramlagan with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We have no chance at winning elections if we are in a position where our party has abandoned principle and abandoned value and abandoned fundamental fidelity to the Constitution in order to embrace a cult of personality.
Wyoming Representative Liz Cheney says a new political action committee will help elect Republicans who oppose former President Donald Trump and his lies about the 2020 election. But others in the party, like Kentucky Representative Andy Barr, argue Cheney's primary defeat is evidence voters are more concerned about the economy than the former president.
Real wages are down. Credit card debt is up because people cannot afford this increased cost of living.
A federal appeals court says for now, Republican South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham doesn't have to testify about Trump trying to overturn the 2020 presidential election results in Georgia. Meanwhile, a new NBC News poll finds nearly 60% of voters want investigations into Trump's election interference to continue. Among Republicans, the number is about 20%, compared with over 90% of Democrats and 60% of independents. In a Sunday phone call, President Biden discussed risk to a Ukrainian nuclear power plant with European leaders. The daughter of far-right Russian nationalist writer Alexander Dugin was killed Saturday when the car she was driving exploded near Moscow. Russian authorities called it a terrorist attack. Her father was the likely target of the bomb set in the car he owned. Education Secretary Miguel Cardone on Sunday said the Biden administration will make an announcement soon on extending a hold on student loan repayments.
We know August 31st is a date that many people are waiting to hear something from. We've been talking daily about this, and I can tell you that American people will hear within the next week or so.
Possible presidential contender Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is campaigning for Republican candidates in other states, as well as his own reelection.
We're out there making things happen, and obviously the state has responded very positively, and we've done really well under my tenure.
While talking up Ohio Senate candidate J.D. Vance and far-right Pennsylvania governor nominee Doug Mastriano, DeSantis criticized the additional $80 billion in IRS funding in the Inflation Reduction Act. Defenders say that's aimed at wealthy tax cheats and corporations. But Aaron Wythe of the Freedom Foundation argues it will hurt average income folks.
These 87,000 new agents, they're not going to be going after 100% of the higher income earners. They're going to be going after everyday Americans as well.
I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
Mega corporations in California may now have to be more fulsome in reporting their greenhouse gas emissions. Suzanne Potter has more on the story.
A big floor vote in the state assembly is expected this week or early next on a bill that would require mega corporations that do business in California to report the full scope of their greenhouse gas emissions. Backers say Senate Bill 260 should increase transparency and accountability. Melissa Romero with California Environmental Voters says the data would give the public, shareholders, and policymakers insight into the progress companies are making to reduce their carbon footprint.
A big floor vote in the state assembly is expected this week or early next on a bill that would require mega corporations that do business in California to report the full scope of their greenhouse gas emissions.
The bill requires private and public corporations that make more than $1 billion a year to disclose carbon emissions up and down the supply chain, following the international greenhouse gas protocol and verify those emissions into the progress companies are making to reduce their carbon footprint. Opponents call the bill a burdensome regulation that would give competitors insight into business practices. Romero says the bill will thwart companies trying to greenwash
the bill requires private and public corporations that make more than $1 billion a year to disclose carbon emissions up and down the supply chain following the international greenhouse gas protocol and verify those emissions via a third party.
It also lays out fines if they don't comply.
The legislative session ends on a burdensome regulation that would give competitors insight
the state
into business
practices.
If it passes
Romero
the assembly,
says the bill
it would have to go back to the Senate
trying
for concurrence
vote
before
heading to the governor's
help
desk.
Set a course the bill
toward
goes
net farther
zero
than
emissions.
A similar federal proposal before the Securities and Exchange Commission, which would cover only publicly traded companies.
For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
There's really no information to hold them accountable. There's no transparency.
The legislative session ends on August 31st. The bill has already passed the state Senate. If it passes the assembly, it would have to go back to the Senate for a concurrence vote before heading to the governor's desk. The bill goes farther than a similar federal proposal before the Securities and Exchange Commission, which would cover only publicly traded companies. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KABU News in Depth, a deeper look at today's top stories. At 6 p.m., it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. And at 8 p.m., A Different Nature. Tonight's weather looks like it'll be clear again with a low of 61. Tomorrow's weather, it's still summer. Some clouds in the morning, though, and then mainly sunny skies in the afternoon. The high will be near 85. In international news, Singapore plans to repeal a law that bans gay sex, making it legal to be homosexual in that country. The decision came after years of fierce debate. Singapore has long been known for its conservative values. It inherited the 377A Act from the British and retained it after its independence in 1965. 377A technically criminalizes, quote, carnal intercourse against the order of nature with any man, woman, or animal, end quote, and has been seen as a ban on all homosexuality. In recent years, an increasing number of people have called for the colonial-era law to be abolished. The government's previous stance was to keep 377A on the books, but also promised not to enforce that law. This was seen as an effort to appease both sides. Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong announced on national TV yesterday Singapore would abolish the law. Lee said, quote, "This is the right thing to do and something that most Singaporeans will accept," end quote. A coalition of LGBTQ plus rights groups called it a hard-won victory, but they also expressed concern over another announcement Lee made in the same speech. Lee said the government would ensure better legal protection for the definition of marriage as one between a man and a woman. This would make it harder for gay marriage to be legalized. Conservatives in Singapore have now organized social media campaigns and events calling for the preservation of traditional values, and some churches continue to promote controversial gay conversion programs. Lee appealed to both camps for understanding. He said, quote, "All groups should exercise restraint because that is the only way we can move forward as a nation together," end quote. Singapore is not the only former colony with a version of 377A. Similar laws continue to exist in many parts of Asia and Africa. In 2018, India's Supreme Court abolished 377A. In recent years, other parts of Asia have also moved to legalize gay marriage. In 2019, Taiwan became the first to do so, and in June, Thailand approved draft legislation allowing same-sex unions. LGBTQ plus activists in Singapore hailed the move as, quote, "a win for humanity," end quote. Is war involving China inevitable? PSU Professor Emeritus Mel Gerdoff offers his thoughts on a variety of military issues involving Taiwan, the mainland, and elsewhere. The opinions expressed are those of Professor Gerdoff alone and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of KBOO Radio or any entities he represents.
Hello, everyone. Many of you will recognize the Chris Hedges book, War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning. The book's main theme is the addiction to war and glorification of it. He writes, "Lurking beneath the surface of every society, including ours, is the passionate yearning for a nationalist cause that exalts us, the kind that war alone is able to deliver. It reduces and at times erases the anxiety of individual consciousness. We abandon individual responsibility for a shared, unquestioned communal enterprise, however morally dubious. There is little that logic or fact or truth can do to alter the experience. Moreover, once this crusade is embraced by the nation, the myth predetermines how the world is perceived." Today, the presumed meaningfulness of war, the sense of purpose it provides, the self-righteousness it inspires, the patriotism it instills, is on display by all sides in Russia's war on Ukraine and in reactions to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's trip to Taiwan. I want to dwell here on the Taiwan situation, a long-running hotspot that isn't yet a war zone, but is being touted by the media and government officials as an arena of imminent conflict. How accurate is that prediction, and why is it being so consistently pushed? In the wake of Pelosi's trip, which I called ill-advised in my commentary of a few weeks ago, tension in the Taiwan Strait has ratcheted up. China, having warned of severe consequences if Pelosi made the trip, followed through with a week of live-fire drills involving missiles and artillery, as well as cyber attacks on Taiwan's government offices. The Chinese have boasted that these exercises demonstrate a capability to blockade Taiwan, and Taiwan's military, which has also carried out live-fire exercises, contends that the Chinese are bent on demoralizing Taiwan's population and setting the stage for an invasion. Most disturbing about these exercises is the nationalist fervor they have inspired on all sides. China's leadership is promoting the view that the U.S. supports Taiwan's independence, which is Beijing's red line. To judge from China's internet activity, young people especially strongly favor a tough military response from their government. In Taiwan, the Chinese exercises have strengthened the population's allegiance to a Taiwanese, not Chinese, future. As one Taiwan polling source reported, 84% said that Taiwan's future should be decided by Taiwanese, and 76% rejected the Chinese Communist Party claim that Taiwan is part of China. And here in the U.S., the bipartisan anti-China consensus in Congress is pushing for more U.S. military aid to Taiwan, upgrading Taiwan's status to that of a security partner, and promoting more high-level visits to Taiwan. All the parties describe their activities as defensive, when in fact they are contributing to a war atmosphere, helped along by mass media reporting that makes war with China seem, if not inevitable, then increasingly likely. War is not inevitable, but it could happen by accident, most likely because the powers that be have chosen not to act to prevent it. The politicians, national security officials, and military-industrial complexes in all three countries that see benefit from rising military tensions. Here, the China threat forces are pleased to be finally confronting China, America's number one national security threat, according to the last two administrations. China is playing its role in this drama by making the threat of an invasion or blockade seem like a real possibility. Hawkish elements in the Chinese military are reveling in the chance to strut their stuff. So far, neither country has made an extremely provocative move. The U.S. has not sent a flotilla into the Taiwan Strait. China has not violated Taiwan's territorial waters, overflown the island, deployed forces to Fujian province opposite Taiwan, or even pressured American businesses in China. What I think is the main purpose behind China's military display is to demonstrate to the U.S. and to Taiwan its capability to reunite Taiwan with the mainland by force if necessary. Capability is not intent, but it does increase the chance of a disastrous miscalculation. On paper, no one in Washington, Beijing, or anywhere else advocates a U.S.-China war. All agree it would be catastrophic and could even go nuclear. Yet actions speak louder than words. Talk in government circles about avoiding a war is belied by warlike statements in Congress, in the militaries of both countries, and in press and public commentaries. And when all that goes on for a long enough time, war becomes accepted as inevitable, becomes a crusade, as Hedges wrote, and thus ends up being a force that gives us meaning. I'm Mel Gertow for The Global Citizen. Thanks very much for listening.
Two-thirds of Americans don't have a will. Eric Galatis tells us how this could change with the use of a new online tool.
August is National Make-A-Will Month, a gentle reminder to some 7 in 10 Americans who don't currently have a will or estate plan that it's never too early to complete this important step in charting their end-of-life journey. Sam Young with the group Compassion and Choices says having a legal, up-to-date will is a powerful way to protect your loved ones, make important decisions about the future on your own terms, and support the causes you value.
This is something that is really a critical and essential document for every person to have. And it's something that we want to encourage them and help them complete.
Many people think wills are just for the rich, but Young says no matter what your estate includes, everyone needs a plan. Compassion and Choices has partnered with the firm Free Will to help Coloradans get their affairs in order in the comfort of their own home with a free and easy-to-use online tool available at CompassionandChoices.org. Tayo Okwande is the founding partner at the Denver-based law firm Okwande LLP, which specializes in helping families navigate probate, the legal process of assigning who will receive heirlooms, property, and financial assets. He says completing a will can help heirs and extended family members avoid potentially contentious debates on what the deceased might have wanted and costly legal fees.
When there isn't a will, there's uncertainty about how assets are distributed and who they go to. That's when those parties find themselves in court.
More than 500,000 people have used the Free Will platform to complete a legally valid will. Young says for many, it brings peace of mind about the future, and there is no obligation to do anything after you print it out. He encourages anyone who hasn't completed this important task to give it a try.
It really takes you through a process where you can complete the will, you can review it, and you can complete the process in about 20 minutes. You're one click away from getting started, and I always like to use from the Nike ad, just do it.
This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Colorado News Connection.
Megacorporations in California may now have to be more fulsome in reporting their greenhouse gas emissions. Suzanne Potter has more on the story.
A big floor vote in the state assembly is expected this week or early next on a bill that would require megacorporations that do business in California to report the full scope of their greenhouse gas emissions. Backers say Senate Bill 260 should increase transparency and accountability. Melissa Romero with California Environmental Voters says the data would give the public, shareholders, and policymakers insight into the progress companies are making to reduce their carbon footprint.
It's also really critical information that the public does not have right now. We know that consumers really want to do the right thing. They want to buy from sustainable companies.
The bill requires private and public corporations that make more than $1 billion a year to disclose carbon emissions up and down the supply chain following the International Greenhouse Gas Protocol and verify those emissions via a third party. It also lays out fines if they don't comply. Opponents call the bill a burdensome regulation that would give competitors insight into business practices. Romero says the bill will thwart companies trying to greenwash their image and will help them set a course toward net zero emissions.
And without actually knowing what their greenhouse gas emissions are and whether or not they're making progress over time in reducing those, there's really no information to hold them accountable. There's no transparency.
The legislative session ends on August 31st. The bill has already passed the state Senate. If it passes the assembly, it would have to go back to the Senate for a concurrence vote before heading to the governor's desk. The bill goes farther than a similar federal proposal before the Securities and Exchange Commission, which would cover only publicly traded companies. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
I'm Michelle Coppola, and coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO, at 8, it's Too Much Information with Abe and Tracy. At 9, Alternative Radio. At 10, it's Flashpoints. And then at 11, it's Radio Zine. All of these KBOO programs, including the evening news, are made possible by support from our members, people like you. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO's News in Depth.